Listen in to the Community Connection Show with Alan Collier every Wednesday from midday to 2pm, where local community groups let you know what's happening right here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
You're listening to People Powered Radio, proudly supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation, cbf.com.au.
We have with us Jackie, and she's one of the supremos at Guide Dogs Australia, and it's terrific to have Jackie with us. We know and we've seen them around. We go into shops and we see the little dogs put money in, but we never really know what actually happens. And also, Jackie, I'm sure there's more to Guide Dogs Australia than just training the dogs. But welcome, Jackie.
Well, thank you, Alan. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you too. First of all, just a couple of just general questions. How long has Guide Dogs Australia been going?
Oh, about 65 years. I mean, we're all, you know, really building on the history every single year and the incredible mission that we're doing and seen a lot of evolution over the last period. But about 65 years we've been here.
Who started it and what was the idea? Well, obviously, and what was the idea behind it?
It was actually somebody in Perth who was working with someone and learned about dogs and learned about how dogs could help someone with low vision and blindness and brought over the first dog to Perth and lo and behold found out that these dogs could be trained to support someone with orientation, mobility, navigation around a community. And people said, gosh, there's something in on this. Let's really look at this as a way to support all sorts of people to get around the community. And that's how Guide Dogs was born all those decades ago.
Because guide dogs, but dogs are amazing animals, aren't they? We run a CSA, a community service announcement from time to time, for I forget what sort of dogs are, but what they're saying is that they can even open washing machines, you know, front-loading washing machines, some of these dogs, and they're amazing what you can teach a dog.
Oh, it's truly remarkable what these animals can do. I mean, apart from learning a particular route to get someone to a supermarket, yes, there are some dogs who can be trained to be assistance dogs, so help with people with opening front doors and answering doorbells and all sorts of things. They're just truly remarkable animals.
I heard a story, and I know this is true because one of my family saw it. They saw a blind, I think she was a lady, walking along with a dog, and the dog stopped. And she thought, come on, keep going, because she couldn't, well, she obviously couldn't see. And it turned out that above sort of a head height, there was a sign that she would have hit. Now, she had no idea that sign was there, and yet the dog stopped her.
So that's right. So I have been found to be stalking people with guide dogs as part of their training. I'm using that word lightly. But I've watched guide dogs take someone to a curb, and these days with electric cars, which you can't hear, the person who is blind might say, on you go, and the dog will stop, because the dog will be able to see a car coming or a cyclist and be able to support that person.
Gee, that's fantastic.
It's truly remarkable when you see that happening, when they stop that person from crossing a road because it's not safe. That's the dog that is really supporting that person to get out into the community and build trust. The relationship between the handler and the dog is like nothing I've ever seen before.
And, of course, the other thing is too, When you mentioned the electric cars, I mean, there's going to be more and more of those on the road, and that would actually be a disaster for a blind person, couldn't it?
It could be very, very dangerous. Yeah. I was in a supermarket with a dog. It was a new relationship between the handler and the dog, and the handler said, find the milk. And this dog had only been taken to the milk cabinet once, but this dog navigated the supermarket, navigated the aisles, and took her handless directly to the milk cabinet.
Fair.
How incredible.
That's incredible. Jackie, are there certain dogs that do it better than others, or are there only one or two breeds that you can work with, or are there plenty of breeds that you can work with?
So we choose to work with Labradors because we think they're particularly Labradorable.
Labradorable.
But they have the temperament, they have the ability to be trained. They're highly trainable because they love food so much. So internationally, they might use German Shepherds, but in Australia, a lot of people are frightened of Shepherds. So we use the Labradors because we think that they're just ideally trainable and they're accepted in community and they make the best guide dogs. And interestingly, the blonde ones and the black ones, we don't use chocolate ones. They tend to have a little bit of a different temperament.
Because when you see a Labrador, they're always just lying down or doing something. They never look aggressive. They just never look aggressive.
Oh, they're never aggressive. And look, I think some people sometimes, talk about the working aspect of the dog, but I can promise you that as soon as that dog gets home and the harness is off, they're as goofy and playful and as any other dog. They're really just incredible dogs to have in your home.
All right, Jackie, well, let's get a little bit more specific. A rough idea of how much it costs to train a guide dog.
A guide dog that is successfully ends up being matched with a handler will cost around about $50,000. So what that takes is the whelping, the breeding, and then the puppy raising, the training, and then the highly intensive period of training out in the streets and supporting that dog to go out with confidence out into the community. So about $50,000 for a dog.
It's a lot of money, isn't it? Does it, when a dog gets allocated, well, I'll ask you about allocation in a minute, does a blind person have to pay any money to get the dog? Do they have to put in a contribution?
No. So thankfully we are in a community which is developing the NDIS. So a lot of our dogs are funded by the NDIS, good, which I think is just remarkable.
Yep.
But there is quite a bit of a percentage of people who do not qualify for the NDIS for various reasons.
Yep.
And that's where we really rely on philanthropy and donors. So, these may be people who are older that are not yet have missed the cutoff age for the NDIS. It might be younger people who just for various reasons, not everybody gets onto the NDIS, but these people are still really needing the assistance of a dog like a Labrador, like a guide dog, to be able to get out into the community and trust that they're going to be safe as they start to navigate around.
And I guess that's one of the reasons why we want you on today, is to encourage people to donate to the guide dogs, because I know up here in Murrealik, over at the supermarket, they've got these little dogs where you put your money in. We all get to the checkout, well, as long as you're not using a credit card, but we all get 10s and 20s and, you know, $1 or $2, which doesn't buy anything anyway. And it's just a great idea to put it in and know that, A, it's going to a great organisation, but also that's going to help one blind person that is going to get a dog.
We could not do what we do every day without the assistance of donors and fundraisers and volunteers. It truly is remarkable. So there's wonderful, beautiful dogs that we've all grown up with in the supermarkets actually raise about $500,000 a year for us.
True.
So that's 10 dogs worth. It's pretty wonderful. And to be able to say to your listeners, yes, that money really counts, that will go on to provide one incredibly highly trained dog to a person who really needs it to start navigating out into the community.
So roughly how many dogs a year do you train?
About 150 in Victoria alone. Of course, New South Wales have got their own cohort, Queensland and stuff. You know, every state has their lot, but about 150.
Gee, that's a good guy. Out of the percent, I don't want to pick on them, but you must spend money, apart from the fact that it costs you this money to do the dogs, there must be some that you also spend money on that for some reason or other just don't cut it. So, I mean, there must be a few on it, and it would be inhuman to think that there won't be one or two that just don't. So I guess it's also a cost, isn't it, to produce a failure in brackets.
That's right. About 50% of the puppies succeed as guide dogs and go on to become life-changing animals.
Yep.
The others, some of them will end up, we work with a PTSD for veterans company in treatment. Yep. So going back to what you're talking about, assistance dogs, there are some of these dogs do go on to have incredible careers in supporting veterans with PTSD. We have a dog over in Adelaide at the airport at the moment to help people calm down before that they get onto flights. We have one of our dogs in a courthouse. Just that sense of having a being to be able to touch and feel can really help someone settle down in very highly stressful situations. So there are other careers that these dogs can pick up.
even if they don't quite make the grade.
Well, if they don't make the guide dog grade, but there are lots of different career paths, they really are that special.
We're talking to Jackie from Guide Dogs Australia. Jackie, can I ask you, first of all, how do you match a person to the dog? Do you have them in, and or how do you actually go about it?
There's a whole science to it. So it's, first of all, understanding what does that person need a dog for? What is it they want? So it might have to do, first of all, with the speed of the dog and how fast they want to get out there and work. It's got something to do with the size of the dog. There's actually quite a variance. Some of them are petite little things and some of them are quite large for larger people, and got to do also with their temperament. So it's really a science of matching it to make sure that they're really aligned in where they go from there. So some people are matched immediately and sometimes they just need to wait a little bit longer to get just the right dog to make sure that that's a very successful match.
So just because the dog doesn't match with A doesn't mean that they get the flick, does it? They could very easily match with B, C or D.
That's right. Yeah, there really is quite a process that they go through, and then the training to make sure that it is a successful combination and relationship as they build it up over time.
All right. So you get somebody in today, and we'll say they get a match. It's okay. So you obviously don't just pack the dog in the car and take it out to the new owner and say, so how long does Guide Dogs work with the new owner and the dog?
Well, it if it's their first dog, it might be over several months. So it might be, so the dogs need to learn the environment, learn the various routes that they need to learn. So things like where the milk cabinet is in the supermarket, learn the routines of that particular person. And then that person, it's getting a dog is not the end goal. It's getting a guide dog to do something. So it might be a young adult who's going to university or starting a new job and learning a particular navigation route to get into a workplace. And then our OTs might start working with them around being successful in the workplace and getting the technology, but then they might need to learn a different route and go to a different environment. And so that's where our guide dogs might come in, back in and support them to learn a new environment or something like that.
All right, so you give somebody a guide dog today, how long would that person expect to have, providing everything went all right, how long would that guide dog be a working guide dog?
Roughly 10 years. We work on 8 to 10 years, but we have seen some dogs who, for various reasons, have even exceeded that and gone to 12 years. But we work somewhere around that 10 years plus or minus two.
So, and it's not a case of once the person gets their dog and their 10 years are up or whatever and the dog's no longer a working dog, then they get other dogs, don't they? Like, it's not a case of, oh, well, you've had yours, bad luck, and we move on.
Oh, gosh, no. So I met someone last week at an event, and they were on to their fifth guide dog. And we also recognise that when one guide dog retires, really the relationship between the dog and the person is very, very, very special, and there's often a tremendous grieving time through that. And sometimes that retired guide dogs will stay in the home while they bring in a new dog and train up that new dog to be their assistance animal, and then they'll have the two dogs there for a while. But there's by that stage, they're very much part of the family.
Yeah, I can understand that. Welcome back to Community Connections, and we're talking to Jackie from Guide Dogs Australia. Now, Jackie, I'm a bit amazed. I believed that guide dogs are guide dogs, but you were saying before, or you intimated, that in fact guide dogs do more than that. So I think we'd be enlightened to hear what those sorts of programs you've got.
Yeah, Alan, it's interesting. Many people are surprised to hear that about 70% of our work is not related to the dog directly.
Truly.
So we have a team of about 40 therapists, and so they might be orientation and mobility specialists, which are people who work with people to learn how to navigate an environment, or occupational therapists, but we also have early childhood specialists. So we do a lot of work right the way through the lifespan. So it might be with young babies who have recently been born and the parents have just received a diagnosis of that their child has low or no vision, and we have an early childhood team that can work with that child to and the parent to learn how to create an environment so that child can go out in an enriched environment, start to explore and test their own boundaries safely. We also work with children at schools so that we can be sure that those children within the Department of Education are navigating schools and can participate in mainstream activities. And then all the way through to people who may have lost their vision after an accident. So we have quite a substantial team who work with people after head injuries where they may have lost all or some of their vision. And then probably one of our biggest groups also are people who are older, who are starting to struggle with their vision, who've worked all their lives planning for a very active retirement. And then what they don't realise is that with some simple strategies, with some assistive technology, with some pieces of equipment, we can actually get people back to doing what they want to do. And that's, we'd like to really put that out there. And if people are struggling with their vision, then please contact us and see if one of our team members or maybe a whole team can come out and work with you.
I mean, that's a real surprise because, to be honest with you, and I was one of them, as I think I told you, my daughter subscribes as a donor for the guide dogs, but I thought they were just the dogs. I thought just got the dogs, trained them and moved them on, but that's not true at all.
No, and we're really, really proud of that work. I mean, as a charity, you know, we're very aware of the unmet need out in there in the community. A lot of the people that we just spoke to do not have access to funding. And frankly, if not guide dogs, then who will work with those people to get them either back into or continue doing what they need to do to live their best life? So a full and active community.
Jackie, do you find it's harder to work with somebody that has had sight and then lost their sight due to an accident because they've had it, or somebody who has been blind right from birth?
Look, I don't know if one is harder than another. I think that there are different, it's a different set of challenges. Mm. I think, look, I was talking to someone the other day who's been blind from birth and she was really working, and we were supporting them with this, working with a support worker to go jogging up in a national park and living an incredibly full, active, extraordinary life. I think that there's a different cycle of grief and loss when someone loses their sight from whatever reason. It might be an accident. It might be a genetic issue that has meant that someone loses their sight over vision. And so it's a different set of challenges. But even if you get two people with the same diagnoses, they're never the same. So it's about sitting down and working out learning from somebody what they want to achieve, what their personal challenges are, and then the strategies or the tools that we might use to really work with someone to get back to doing what they want to do.
All right, Jackie, so you're welcome. In this instance, how long would you work with the? And I know you're going to say that everyone's different. I know you're going to say that before I start. But how long would you generally in this side of it? How long would you generally work with a person? I knew you were going to say that.
But I think people dip in and out of services, and I think the really impactful, important work we do is through life's transition. So it might be when someone's going into school or leaving school or into the workplace or out of the workplace. So I think life transitions are when the most intense work can do, and that's when we have a whole team of orientation and mobility specialists and occupational therapists and physiotherapists and there's a whole team that would support that. In between those major life phases, people might come in and out for a top up this or a particular skill in that or a new piece of equipment in this. But I think life transition work is where I think our teams really shine.
Jackie, all right, so you've got a person that's living in, say, Lilydale, Ringwood or somewhere like that, and for some life change they have to move to Hillsville or down to Pakenham or wherever. Do you find then that you have to get involved with those people, A, with the dogs, and B, with the person, even if they haven't got a dog, their change of circumstance, or do they adapt to those by themselves?
Our research shows that when people come in and start working with us, they usually say, I wish we'd done this 5 years ago.
Right.
Because I think it's something that is actually sometimes difficult for someone to work it out in themselves. So sometimes we can come in as a team into their natural environment, into their homes, into their community, into their workplace, school, wherever it is they need the help. And it doesn't necessarily mean a massive amount of work, but I think to get that training, that tool earlier, is something that can really put someone a lot further down the track, you know, figuratively and literally.
Jackie, you've mentioned about three or four times now a team. How many people would on a general rule, when you say, you work with these people, how many would be in that team, and would they all be together at one time or just one of that team every now and again?
Well, we work in a social model, which means that we'd have a team, say, of about four people, but there might be a primary discipline that's really important. So let's say it's the guide dog trainer. And then they would bring in the occupational therapist or the orientation person or the assistive technology when needed. So do they tend to come in all at once? No, not really. There might be some planning time right at the beginning where they're mapping out what support might look like over the next period of time, whatever that is, year, 2 years. And then therapists would come in, the right therapist at the right time, over that period.
Jackie, obviously those people are all trained professionals, but the people that take the dogs, because you put them out to people, don't you, to train them. So how do you pick those volunteers to not train them when they're in your care, but you see them in the shopping plazas with I'm in training on their back and all that. How do you pick those people, and how long do they have the dogs for?
Oh, you're talking about our beautiful puppy raisers who do such an incredible job for us. So the puppy's born when they're about 8 weeks old. It's time for them to go to a puppy raiser. And we're calling out we need more puppy raisers across Victoria. So we're looking for people who they will go through an assessment, but it could be someone who's on their own, could be a family, who can take a pup for up to about a year. And then start working. They've got the whole support of Guide Dogs Victoria behind them, but start taking them out into the community bit by bit, come to puppy raising classes, teach them to sit, sit and be quiet for a little while. And then when they're about 14 months old, they come back into our kennels, and that's where they're handed to the professionals who are highly skilled, trained guide dog trainers. And they're the ones who will work with them very intensely right before they're matched with a handler.
You find that many of the puppy raisers don't want to hand them back?
Oh, who? it's true. And it's, you talk to people and say, are you interested in, but I couldn't give it back. But I think we've got to just, once you see the impact that a dog can have on a person's life, that as you said, can make it safer for someone to navigate the branches over the footpath and crossing the road and more safely, and therefore being able to get to a workplace independently, or how, whatever it is that means for one person. I mean, that's really is contributing back to the community. That's giving back in a very, very special way.
True. All right, so the puppy raiser has the puppy, hands it back. How long before you give them another puppy?
Oh, the next day if they'd like it.
I can. So, like, straight away they can have another puppy.
Yes, we're always looking for puppy raisers, and so it's evaluated on a case-by-case basis. And but someone said the other day, I can't take a puppy, I travel a bit. Well, we do have an army of temp carers. I'm one of them. So if someone were to need to travel or get to travel and have a holiday, there are people in the background who could take them temporarily and look after them and then bring them back.
Mentioning holidays, somebody's got a puppy and they're going to move into and they're going to travel interstate. Would you encourage them to take the dog with them, or do you like them to stay in their own environment?
Are you talking about a handler or a puppy raiser? Yeah,
sorry, a puppy raiser. No, a puppy raiser.
Actually, Alan, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I mean, we have guide dogs in every state. And so it may be that they transfer up to the other states and are picked up there and trained, or maybe we will bring them back into the Victorian family and find another.
I didn't mean it like that. What I meant was that the person's going into state for 3 weeks. They've hooked the caravan up and they're going for three. Would you ask them to bring them back to you, or would you suggest that they should take them with them?
I think most people would prefer to go to a temp. But that we'd have that conversation, and so long as they're doing their training and not leaving them alone in a hotel room all day, I think that would be fine to stay with the family and get out and do something new and build up that. It's part of the toolkit of a guide dog is to learn new environments and find out what long-term travel is. So it might be seen as an opportunity to extend the skill set of the dog.
So I guess, and we're going to talk about this in a minute. I've just got to take another quick break. I guess what we're asking is not only we'd like to see people put more money in the little dogs when they ever see them, and I guess we're asking for people who would consider making a monthly donation. But I guess today you're probably putting a call out for anyone for puppy raisers too.
Yeah, all of the above. As I said, we work with so many people who have no access to funding that we can really change people's lives with the support of donors, fundraisers and volunteers, of which our biggest group are the puppy raisers.
Sounds terrific. We're talking to Jackie from Guide Dogs Australia. Jackie, one problem that I can see is that now a lot of us just don't have spare cash. Well, when I say we don't have spare cash, because we go into the supermarket, we pay with our credit card. The little dog's there, we can't do anything about it. Is there any plans to reverse that somehow?
Yeah, Alan, good point. I can't remember the last time I carried a pocket full of change. So what we've done is you might start to see QR codes starting to crop up on the dogs in the supermarkets. And as you would check into supermarkets through the COVID period, so you can scan the QR code and it'll take you through to a site where it's really as easy as possible to donate to us. So look out for the QR codes. How's that for digital?
Can't do better than that. Because unfortunately, people are just not carrying a lot of money. In my case, it's a drag on my pants, and I don't want to lose my pants walking along. So I try not to carry a lot of money. Jackie, look, I think they're terrific programs. As I say, particularly with the guide dog, my father got involved in 50 years ago helping raise money. So I guess let's go back again. There are really about three things that we'd like to see happen. A, you'd like people to, on an ongoing sponsorship, to sign up over a 12-month period to give. The second thing that you're mentioning is puppy raisers. And the third thing is volunteers. So what sort of things would you like the volunteers to do apart from being a puppy raiser?
Yeah, we're just getting our volunteer program up and going again after COVID. We really shut it down over the last couple of years. But there are all sorts of roles for volunteers. Come and be part of a fundraising effort, or sometimes we need support in the office. And sometimes there are events that we want to run to build awareness. So please feel free to contact us. We'll put you in contact with Wendy, our volunteer coordinator, and we'd love to start to see our volunteer community get back and active again.
Jackie, just a quick question. COVID-19, we all know that we struggled. We had lockdowns and all that. Did that curtail the puppy raising? Were you able to continue to as normal, or did that put a real hold in the puppies that were coming out?
I think with most organisations across the world in the last 2 years, we've really adopted that word called agility. And so we definitely got puppies out to puppy raisers in that time. You know, we started to really work with people in different ways to be able to do training classes, and we started to do a lot of telepractice, so by remote, a bit like the way we're talking now with cameras on and showing. So we really had to be adaptable in the way that we worked, but we were amazing, I think, in the way that we were able to adapt to train puppies remotely, in person where we can. We had a really terrific partnership at the convention centre where we were able to take our puppies and train them there and going up and down. Yeah, the exhibition and convention city, they were wonderful in reaching out to us and saying, hey, you need a facility? Yeah, we need a place. And we'd go up and down the elevators and walk around. It was a terrific environment for us. So really great, great coming together of the community to support our mission.
Terrific. All right, so let's just talk very briefly about that. So a puppy raiser takes a puppy home and he or she takes them down to the supermarket, and they show them where the milk container is, and they walk around the plaza and they're... Firstly, can I just ask you, you're not supposed to be petting these dogs, are you, particularly when they're working?
If they've got the jacket on and their harness on, we ask the public to please step away and leave them to work. It's really difficult to do. I still find it difficult in the workplace to not bend down and give them a cuddle, but they're working dogs and they are trained to be able to turn off distractions and just focus on the environment and their person and their human that they're working with.
Fair enough. So the puppy raiser, they take them down, you obviously want them to get used to crowds, you want them to get used to streets. Is the puppy raiser then, or do you ask them to take them into places like lifts, and you mentioned escalators and things like that, or does that come later when you people are working with them?
So it's a fairly controlled program because it's very important that every new experience for the puppy is positive and builds on their skill set. So there's a company that the whole of Guide Dogs will support. So each puppy will have a puppy advisor who will go out with the person when they're trying a new thing. So it's a carefully, they have weekly lessons and puppy training sessions, and then they'll just gradually go out into the community together.
All right. Unfortunately, our hour's going very quickly, as I told you it would. Jackie,
it certainly is.
Can you give us some contact details, please, for people who either want to volunteer, want to look at raising some money for you, or want to become puppy raisers? So how do they get hold of Guide Dogs Australia?
Or even access our services. So the central phone number is 1-800-804-805. And if you'd like more information on our website, that's guidedogsvictoria.com.au.
The phone number again, please, Jackie?
1-800-804-805.
Now, you mentioned your website, Guide Dogs Australia. Is it .com.au or .org?
guidedogsvictoria.com.au.
Righto. So when they go on there, is there various tabs like for puppy raise, or do they just all go onto volunteers?
all the information in there about being a puppy raiser, donating, or accessing our services. If you're finding that your vision is starting to deteriorate, we're here for you.
Yep. So is there any conditions on a person who is finding their eyesight deteriorating? Do they have to – is there a criteria they have to fit to be able to get involved with Guide Dogs Victoria?
No, come and see us. We have – and this is where our philanthropy really helps us extend our mission. We want to – we really want to work with people who don't have any other options. There is a gap in health services and disability services that we want to be able to really work with people to live the life that they choose to live. So please contact us. We will work with you.
And we need to mention again, because I certainly didn't know, there's more than just the guide dogs.
More than dogs. That's a big campaign of ours. We have a team of therapists ready to work with you to get back to what you want to do.
Yeah. Look, I think it's a terrific organisation, and we'd love to talk to you again later in the year. We hope that as of today you get a whole – well, people don't tend to volunteer overnight, so that could take a while, but we certainly hope that we've helped you along a little bit, and we've enjoyed having you along.